Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Live Line. Cullum O'Mungoin here. You can get us from the north on 08457 85333. Send us voice notes on WhatsApp on 087 484 8888. You can text us on 51551 and you can email us on joe@rte.ie. Dee, good afternoon to you.
Hi Cullum, how are you?
How's baby Tomás?
He's good, he's good. Now he's on my shoulder here as we speak, so you might hear a few crackles along the way here. He's a bit windy.
Okay. His first go on Live Line, definitely, but potentially not his last.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't know that. He might take your job, you know?
All right, well, sure. We'll hear what kind of a set of lungs he has for himself over the course of this item. When was he born?
Yeah. So, Tomás was born on the 26th of August. So he's actually 4 weeks old today. So a big birthday.
Great, a milestone there. Now, you got an email or you got a text from the hospital, the Rotunda, on the 28th of August to tell you what?
Yeah, so Tomás, originally his due date was the 2nd of September, but he was delivered early. He came on the 26th of August, and in around that time, I got a text from the hospital to say that Tomás would be eligible for the RSV immunisation and that a midwife would be in contact with me. So I was actually delighted to hear this. To be honest with you, Colin, I didn't know much about this. Pregnancy brain and all that, I missed it. But when I heard that the RSV immunisation was being rolled out, I was delighted. And I even said it to the nurse, you know, about the text. I was like, gee, that's brilliant now, delighted that he's going to get this immunisation. Because we hear about how sick little babies can get, particularly under one. So that was fine. So I waited a few days because the text said that they would be in contact with me. And nothing came forward. So I rang down the hospital myself and I spoke to a lovely lady there. And she said, no, she said, Tomás, because he was born on the 26th of August, he won't be eligible for it because the scheme has only been rolled out and given to babies from the 1st of September.
Right.
Now, I pleaded with her and I kind of said to her, look, I said, you know, his due date was the 2nd of September, you know, can he get it? And she said, no, unfortunately not. I said, well, look, can I get it from my GP? Can I get it from the pharmacy? She says, no, she says, it's not available. And I said, look, I don't mind paying for it. You know, it's like, that's fine. She says, no, it's not available. It's given to the children when they're born.
Right. So when you got the notification for it, did you look into RSV and look up some of the statistics on it? I think according to the HSE, 1 in 2 newborn babies get it. And about 4% of babies, 4 out of 100, are hospitalised if they do contract it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was so keen about it, because we always hear about it, particularly during winter, you know, and of course we're September now and we're running straight into the winter now, you know. And I did read up on it, and I know that the HSE is rolling this out on the back of research done in Spain, and it sounds absolutely brilliant, and I absolutely applaud the HSE for rolling this out. I just feel aggrieved that you know, we're not getting the choice to give the vaccination. Instead, they're kind of using this crude date of the 1st of September, you know. So Tomás is going to miss out on other babies, you know, born in August or July, are missing out on this really, really important immunisation just because of the date that they were born.
Right.
You know, like, if you think about all the other vaccinations babies getting all, and even ourselves, it's all by choice, you know, and this has been done by date, and we really, really wish, and I really, really wish this could be done by choice. And I know I'd definitely be giving it to Tomás, because I don't want to be in the hospital with him during the winter or anything like that, you know, and please God, we won't.
Sure. I suppose, you know, there's choices to be made in the health service as well about, you know, what medications they can give and how much of those medications to buy. So maybe they have to set a window of those at the greatest risk and say, we need to buy the vaccines to cover that period. And maybe we just have to exclude some people.
Yeah, well, you know, you say that, and then, you know, I think of, you know, the government talking about the budget, and they're talking about, you know, this 560-odd euro to give to parents and newborns, and I say to myself, I would rather the RSV immunisation. Like, imagine if they were rolling that out and giving it to all babies in 2024, as opposed to giving 560-odd euro. I mean, like, if you roll out the scheme from 2024, like, that would be something that would be embedded in the system and would be lifelong and would be way more valuable than, you know, just throwing a few hundred quid at parents. You know, like, you know, you're able to actually keep babies safe if you're giving them this immunisation. You know, money doesn't keep them safe, you know, sure, but this immunisation will.
All right, Dee, hang on there with us, because we're joined by Helen on the line as well. Helen, how are you?
Hi, Colm, how you doing?
How's Dara? What age is Dara now?
Dara is 6 weeks on Friday, so 5 weeks last Friday. We'll age him up to nearly 6 weeks.
Right, so you're in the same boat as Dee, basically. Had you heard about the RSV vaccination around the time you were ready to give birth to Dara?
Yeah, I had. Like, I suppose I'm a first-time mum, and I, like most people, went down an Instagram rabbit hole following all these different people who give you advice. And I know there was a few Irish doctors on social media talking about the RSV immunisation and how much it reduced hospitalisations. And I was, you know, delighted. But I did notice the date was going to be 1st of September, and Dara was actually late. So he was due on the 8th of August. And so I was kind of thinking, okay, well, Dara might not fit into that, but is there some other way we can get it? You know, is it like the COVID vaccines or the other vaccines that rolled out in Boots? Could we go to our GP and pay for it, I think, like your other caller said? And I suppose I was just, the timeline of the 1st of September, I understand, is probably, you know, due to some kind of budget constraint or some other reason. But, you know, Dara is 5 weeks now, and, you know, a September baby is 2 or 3 weeks. You know, there's not that much difference in how much they can each fight, you know what I mean? And coming into peak season, I would just be worried about him picking something up, you know.
And knowing what you know now, are you reluctant to have Dara in contact with other children? Is there a kind of extended family that you have to contend with?
Yeah,
or would you think twice,
look,
maybe, about visiting?
To be honest, I think with a newborn, you're kind of, obviously, my hands are dry from how many times I wash my hands a day, but you're worried anyway about, you know, them catching anything. But just the statistics around, you know, you said them there on hospitalisation and RSV, and I had a friend who had a baby and ended up in hospital with RSV, and, you know, that's really real then when you see somebody going through it. And, you know, you'd be careful. Like, I would have, Dara's very lucky, he's got 20 cousins, 10 on each side, but, you know, only one of them has seen him and they haven't touched him because they're just worried coming into peak September season, all the bugs going around, people going back to school. We're just, you know, we are kind
you'd
of
you'd be a bit concerned about
movement.
Little snotty noses coming into the house, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
all right,
exactly.
Okay, stay with us.
Well, big snotty noses usually have a bit more sense.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, this is true. Hang on there, Helen, as well, because we have Fiona Hanrahan, who's Director of Midwifery and Nursing, on the line there. Fiona, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Colm. Good afternoon.
Yeah, so you've heard Dee and you've heard Helen, and they're concerned about RSV. Are they right to be?
Oh, they absolutely are right to be. I mean, RSV is a nasty virus if a baby gets sick with it, but it circulates at higher levels in the winter season, as you probably know.
Can you tell us, first of all, a bit about the vaccine and the logic of this September 1st deadline?
So I suppose, first of all, it's not a vaccine, it's an immunisation, and it's important to make that point because it doesn't affect the baby's immune system. It's an immunoglobulin given directly to the baby, so it gives the baby what it needs straight away. I mean, the decision to start 1st September wasn't at my level. We were asked to be ready to go on the 1st September, and to be fair to us, in a maternity hospital that's really busy, it was a new service coming in. So we got up and running on the 1st September, which was a Sunday, and staff came in on the Sunday to help. To get babies immunised before they left the hospital. So the plan is 1st September till the end of February every newborn will be offered immunisation while in maternity hospitals. So it's not available to your public health nurse, it's not available to your GP, that it's literally to the maternity services while you're here with us before you go home.
All right, and you make that distinction there between immunisation and a vaccine. Can you enlighten us as to what the difference is? The vaccine that's been talked about, the Health Protection Surveillance Centre, is nirsevimab.
It's an immunisation, it's not a vaccination.
All right, and what's the difference?
So basically it's what's called a passive immunisation. So it gives the baby the antibodies it needs directly. So it doesn't wake up the baby's immune system or affect the immune system in any way. So the baby's body doesn't have to do any extra work to get this. Once it's given into them, it works for about 150 days and then it's gone. Peaks at around day 6.
All right. And have you come across cases like Dee's and Helen's before where people, I suppose, have had their concerns raised about RSV and then are unable to access this immunisation?
Well, I must say, I suppose for us in the Rotunda, we started providing it for infants on the 1st September, as we were asked to do. So we have had some people phoning in, and exactly as the lady was saying there, it's always going to be a cut-off date that someone's going to be affected by, but there is a window that has been provided. This is what's called a Pathfinder programme. So it's the first year we've done this in Ireland, and what they need to do is do this Pathfinder programme of giving it to newborns for the first 6 months, and then do a full review across the summer next year to see of the impact, look back on the winter and see how it's been for the children's hospitals. As you probably know, 1 in 2 babies can get RSV in the first year of life, and some of those can get very sick, but not all babies get very sick.
All right, and if 4 in 100 are hospitalised as a result of RSV, where do those babies end up? Do you end up having to look after some of those sick babies, or would they be going to one of the children's hospitals?
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, RSV doesn't really affect in a maternity hospital. We're sort of lucky it doesn't come into us here. So during the winter, it would be the children's hospitals that would be badly infected. And I'm sure if anyone has been in an A&E in Temple Street or Crumlin or Talla across the winter, they'll have seen lots of children with coughs and snuffy noses and breathing difficulties from RSV.
Right. And do you have any idea, and I appreciate what you're saying, you were given, I suppose, the marching orders to begin this on September 1st, but why isn't it just standard throughout the year? I think the immunity lasts for, is it 150 days?
So 150 days, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose what this is going to do really is, I suppose, this is going to give public health and NIAC and all those, I suppose, more information about RSV and how it moves across the community. So when they do the look back exercise next year, they can see the impact of this immunisation on community rates, and that will allow them to plan for next year and following years. So this is the very first time it's been done in Ireland, and it's the first Pathfinder programme.
And for people who, we've heard, I suppose, and I appreciate the difference between immunisation and vaccine, but in the case of, say, the COVID vaccines, a lot of them weren't used and there was an element of waste, albeit, stockpiles had to be held for very understandable reasons. But in areas where, I suppose, mothers want to use their discretion and really want to get this done and they're close to the window, is there the scope there for hospitals to exercise any discretion outside of that September the 1st deadline?
No. We've been told that the 1st September is the cut-off point. Now, I do know that there won't be any wasted doses because they're tracking them very carefully. Every dose that we're giving here is in track directly back. So there's a very careful check being made on all doses. So there won't be any wastage. And I think, as far as I'm aware, the stock they have in the country here will see us through this winter and probably start next winter as well if they decide to carry on.
All right.
And it's very different to the COVID vaccine because that was rolled out nationally for the full population. This is a very defined population of babies. You kind of have an idea of how many babies are born across winter. So it's a very set down program for the first 6 months from September to February.
All right. And for the two wee fellas, one of whom I think we can hear on the line there, I think that
I might, can hear
might,
them.
That might be Dara. Do you have any advice then for Dee and Helen as to what they can do in the absence of this immunisation, what they might do? I mean, should they hold off bringing the lads into contact with little cousins or big cousins or older relatives or anything like that, or should they just get on and live life? And do you have any tips in case there is an infection or a sniffle?
Every winter we would give the same advice to new parents taking new babies home outside of RSV. It's all to do with hand hygiene practices, not having babies being kissed by people. So, it's a respiratory virus. So if someone stays away from a baby and has washed their hands, and just to keep them out of crowded areas. It's the same advice we give to every new parent every winter since I've been a midwife. So just this winter.
If there is a November election, would you advise politicians not to be trying to kiss babies then?
100%. Right. 100%.
All right. Dee, Helen, do you have any questions there? Any tips of seeing as we have an expert on the line just in terms of...
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, say with you know, the pathway kind of system, or it's kind of like they're doing research, you know, and I just wonder, could that research still not be done in a way to where there's an opt-in and an opt-out, you know, so that, you know, we're still, like in Ireland, we've always had that choice element.
Yeah.
And in this very important, like, this is such an important immunisation for us, we would love to still have that choice. It just feels... It feels like there's something there that could protect our babies, and it's dangling there in front of us, but we can't get it. Even if you wanted to pay for it, we can't get it. And it's just, it's really frustrating, and it's really hurtful to think that the state has this immunisation there, but we can't get at it. And the other thing that goes through my mind, and I don't want to be OTT here, but I think, you know, God forbid, you know, a baby born in July or August did get very sick with RSV, and, you know, you're wondering, you know, the state had it, but they had a cut-off point of the 1st of September. So that baby who did end up getting very, very sick with it in August could have actually had access to it, only for this kind of crude 1st of September date was put on, you know? I just don't know how that argument would stand up there, you know. And again, I suppose just the last thing I would just say is that, you know, again, the government talking about budgets and all that, you know, if they could roll this out and have our GPs or our public health nurses and the hospitals, you know, roll it out to all babies under one or whatever they think, that would be a game changer, as opposed to anything to do with just €560, you know, like, this is more important than money, in my view.
All right. Thanks for that, Dee. Helen, any questions for Fiona there?
Yeah, I think just to kind of echo the I suppose one of the comments there that Dee made was that, you know, I think a lot of new mothers would be willing to pay for this. I understand, you know, I had my baby in Hollow Street. The maternity hospitals are brilliant and busy. And, you know, if there was a way that we could, you know, provide access to the immunisation through public health nurses or GPs, it would be brilliant. Or even, you know, if there was a way it could be offered through a pharmacy kind of setting, I don't know, I think it would be great. And then just the other thing is just, like, you know, you just referenced all the hospitalizations in the winter. You know, the data on the immunization that I've seen shared shows that it brings down those hospitalizations. So surely that can be good for those children's hospitals and for, you know, society in general. In the winter, we always hear about how the emergency rooms are under pressure. So I just think there is a case to be made for making it available somehow, and for having an impact on those kind of hospitals in the winter, and, you know, sparing parents that experience if possible.
All right. And Fiona, then finally to you. I mean, if children's hospitals do experience a high number of babies over the course of the winter with RSV, do you think that'll feed into the analysis of this Pathfinder programme and maybe influence where the deadlines might be drawn next year, the extent to which the rollout might happen?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is a Pathfinder program, and, you know, people way above my pay grade are making decisions about this stuff. So they're looking back all the time and looking forward. So all this data will be taken into consideration. And plus the impact of this show and what you're saying today will be taken into consideration as well, you know, by parents affected by it. So that certainly will be fed back through the various committees running this.
Okay.
I don't want to wait for next year. Like, I'm my baby now. I want access to this immunisation. Do you know, like, I don't want to be emailing you, geez, I don't even want to say this, but I'd hate to be emailing you to say, Jesus, here we are, we're in the hospital now. You know, like they have it. Like, give it to us. Like, why not give us a choice of saying yes or no? And I'm sure there's lots of parents out there who don't want it either. But there's lots of parents who do, and give us a choice. That's how we've always operated, you know, and I don't see why this has to be any way different. And yes, I know it's kind of a part of a research kind of program in a way, you know, but you can still have the setup of that it is opt-in or opt-out, you know. And as I said, this affects me now. It doesn't affect me next year, you know, as much.
Okay.
And so I'm keen for something to happen on it sooner rather than later.
Okay, and look, thanks for getting in touch with us, Fiona. As she says, it's those decisions are made above her pay grade. She's involved in the administration of it. But thanks to Dee, Helen and Fiona. We're back in a minute after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungine here. Seamus, good afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon, Colm.
The card that never arrived, Seamus. It was all right when it left you. Tell us what was in it.
It was a birthday card to me 12-year-old goddaughter. Lovely little child. And I put it in good faith, paid me postage, put me sender's name and address on the back of it nice clearly, make sure the address was right, put her name on it a day before our birthday. I said she'd get a nice surprise in the morning, and I put some money in it.
How much?
As you do. Well, it was only a small token. She was 12 years old, and I put 12 euro into it. Now, it's just a token. I usually buy her a present when I meet her, but just for the old way I was doing it, Colm, was a child's 12, you put 12 euros, they're 13, you put 13, 18, you put 18. This is what I used to do, you know, to the children, you know, the line that's in me life.
Sure.
And so you know, an old-fashioned thing, I'm sure everybody does it. And I put 10 euro and I put 2 euro notes. I sellotaped the 2 euro to the inside of the car so it wouldn't be juggling around. And I'd seen it well. And then I expected a phone call the next day. Oh, thank you, you know, God the Father for it. No sign. And then a few days later, I rang her and she wasn't talking to me.
All right.
Would
she normally ring you on a birthday now? I mean, seeing as you never forget it, it's presumably at this stage she's forgiven you for sending her the 1 euro on the first birthday. But anyway, moving on to the 12th birthday.
I didn't do that. I didn't do the 1 euro. But token, it was only a token. But she wouldn't even remember that if I did. But but you know, when they're 12, they're sensitive to their birthdays, and a child's a child. But she never received it. Not an iota. She never received it. And now she doesn't trust me. And it's not the money.
She doesn't believe you.
She doesn't believe me, Colm. She doesn't believe me. My mother doesn't believe me either. Say, it's like the old joke there. You know, the old joke was, I was going to send you money, but I already sealed the envelope. You know that old joke there that was going on?
Yeah. Did you put, because it used to be cheaper to, when you were sending cards, not to seal the card. Mm. That was the gamble with birthday cards. But if people were putting money in it, they might seal it with a bit of sellotape. Did you take that precaution?
Yes, I sealed and I stuck the sellotape to the coins inside so they wouldn't jiggle around or cut the envelope. And it was a strong envelope. And now, you know, the problem is, I was just wondering, it never happened to me before. I sent cards. It was just the first time I sent money in it, a bit of money, you know, a token, you know, in it, that I can remember anything happening. And maybe I did before and I did. Nothing ever happened. It got there and got there. But I was wondering, did it ever? I'm just wondering, because I paid for the service and I didn't get it, Colm. You know, and I put, make sure that I even checked with the postmaster in the thing. I said, that's the right way, the envelope is running. No, she said, that's under the weight. And I'm in the bad books and I'm just very disappointed.
We'll get back to the service there in a moment. But I mean, after all these years sending, I presume, you know, you start with a fiver because it's easy to send and then you can work up from there for all the different birthdays. But the evidence is there, Seamus. I mean, you'd been sending it on every other year and now the doubt is creeping in. Would they not give you the benefit of the doubt?
What do you mean, give me the benefit of doubt?
Well, if you'd marked it every other year, why, you know, what's the cause for doubt this year?
I rear two children on my own and I sent give them money, but I was rearing them on my own. But I would send cards to ones, you know, other people. And I'm not sure whether I sent my goddaughter or because I met her at them days and we'd go out for a meal or I'd buy her a present or something like that.
You'd been good for as a godfather. You'd marked the birthday other years anyway.
Well, that's what you have to do because children, when you lose the trust of a child, it's very hard to get it back, Colm. You know, they just think you know, and I don't know whether she got other cards or not, but she was expecting, you know, something from me. She even told me a week before that was about to make sure a reminder. And I was there, oh, you know, like, I was just thinking that morning she's going to get the surprise. And I trusted the post to set to do their bit. And now my trust is a little bit damaged. And I was wondering, is it happening to someone else? Is it, you know, or... But I'm just annoyed about it.
Right, and it wouldn't have been delayed because there was a time again where, you know, if you were sending a letter, you'd kind of get it in, it'd be arriving the day or 2 days afterwards. But with postcards, you'd nearly be back from your holidays before they arrived, and, you know, and birthday cards and the like might be the same. So did you allow for the fact that, you know, there might have been a delay on this? When was the birthday?
I sent it on the 3rd of September, the Tuesday the 3rd, and Alberta was on Wednesday the 4th.
Right.
If that's correct. I sent it the day before, the 3rd of September, and it should arrive the 4th. Now, I did ring up the post and they said you have to fill out a form, and they said there could have been delay, you have to give it 5 working days. And I said, well, it's 14 working days and there's no sign of it. And I did put me name and address in there. So if it didn't get that half side, why didn't it come back to me then, I was thinking. So it's just gone AWOL, absent without leave. And I'm wondering, is it happening? Where many's happening? It stressed me out a bit, you know?
Sure.
I'm taking extra cups of tea now just to solve it and get me indemnity back with this child, you know?
Well, I mean, as you say, I mean, if you lose the trust of somebody and they don't think you're good for it, they think they forgot your birthday, you have to get it back. But then again, the postal service, Seamus, they might have rattled your own trust with them. Did you get on to them? Did you let them know in between these copious cups of tea you've been drinking to cope with this? Did you get on to them and let you know your feelings on it?
I did. What I done this morning was I rang the CEO of On Post and I didn't
personally.
Ring him, I emailed him.
All right, go on.
No,
yeah.
I emailed. No, you wouldn't get through to him personally. You know right well yourself. These people is very hard to pin down. They have secretaries and secretaries and secretaries, whatever. But I decided I'd email him. And I emailed him and I told him what I told you. And I said I was very disappointed. So he got someone from the customer department, customer director of customers. And because I put on the end of it, I said, I've contacted RTE as well just to and see if they want to. I just asked them this morning. I contacted RTE and Joe Duffy's show. And then when
they disappointed it was me then. They must be fierce. They'll be sorry they got back to you now when it's only me on the line. But anyway, what did you hear back from them?
Well, I heard 20 minutes later then when I put that at the end. And that's when I got all this kind of apologies. And they said they'd send the money back and they'd send it for another card. But it's not the money in the card. It's the disappointment of her not getting it. It's the trust and the whole disappointment of it that's the problem.
Right.
You know, I don't care about the money. The money's only small. It was only small. I'd buy her a present when I meet her. I'd bring her out for the whole day. I don't care. You know, it's the whole thing of me promising. And when you promise a child, you never promise a child something because they don't trust you anymore. You know, a promise is very... And even if I promise anybody else something, if I say I promise, then that means I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say something, I promise. That means I don't ever promise something I won't do. And I promised, you know, that I wouldn't forget her.
And what way are they going to refund you the money? Are they going to give you... I think many years ago when people were marking my birthday, they used to send me maybe a postal order in the post. Are they going to send you a postal order? Are they still doing the rounds?
Well, he said he's going to thoroughly investigate it and he's going to send me the money back plus the price of another card. And look, I think... You know, it's not the matter of that. It's the principle of it. They need to, you know, if he tells me, well, he said he's going to investigate and I trust him to do that. That's what they said they're going to do, investigate thoroughly to see what's the system. Because they're the people at the top and I'm the person at the bottom. And, you know, you have to trust you have to, when you post a letter or you post a card, especially birthday cards, it's very important to people.
Very, yeah.
Yeah. Very, 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 very important. If you don't send, see, and especially older people in Everton get a card. Some people have nobody in their lives, only a card to get in. It shows that maybe families not even talking to each other, and once a year to get a card at Christmas. And that means the world to maybe someone who's estranged from their children, or, you know, or you don't see kids far away, or grandchildren or anything like that. It's more than a card. It's a token of your love for them.
And come here to me. On her 11th birthday, did you stick a €1 coin and a note in it? Or did you mark it in some other way? Can you remember? Do you think it was the coin maybe that caused the issues in some fashion or form?
That's what I find. It's possible that that's what happened. And I was wondering what happened down the line somewhere. I didn't do that last year. I didn't put a coin in it. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe, yeah.
But if they're going and tell people, because look, we're all doing it down the years doing these things, and I know you're not supposed to send cash in the letter that says you don't do that. It's not advisable. And I didn't register it. Maybe I should have registered it, you know, and I didn't register it.
Would you send money again? Would you send money again by post?
I'm not going to take that chance. I'm going to go to the school, and I made the joke where I said I'm going to go to the school and I'll be outside with a big card, and you can look out the window at your school. Just geez, don't
right.
do that.
Yeah, she won't be talking to you for another reason if you do that.
So
yeah.
I said, you know, I'm going, happy birthday, and all you, and I said, no, I'm only joking, I wouldn't do that. Yeah,
right.
Because you'd be embarrassed, you know.
Sure.
But I like to have a bit of a laugh and a bit of a fun, because childhood years are very short, Colm, you know.
They are. You could have done the singing telegram. You could have sung her happy birthday at the school gate.
Hang on. What I was thinking.
Hang on there, Seamus, because Jane has been listening to you, had a similar experience. Jane, you're a grandmother. You've given up sending cards, have you?
I've given up. I get in the card and I leave it open, and I have an arrangement with their mothers to put the money in before the card is handed.
Oh, grand.
I used to put money in the card, and it's a good few years ago. I didn't hear from, I didn't hear any, you know, I thank you for your birthday card, and enclosed. And I asked a few, I have 12 grandchildren, and I asked a few of the parents, did so-and-so get my card? And they said, no, we were very surprised because you used to. So I've stopped, and I have an arrangement with their mothers. But they leave the card open and they put the money in and I sort it out afterwards.
All right, you reimburse them after they put in
an agreed
amount.
Right. Well, yes.
And how many times did it happen, Jane?
Happened at least 3 or 4 times.
Right.
Now, admittedly, it's not today or yesterday because I've stopped doing it. My grandchildren are getting big now. But they are big.
Right.
But the youngest is 15, so you can guess
right.
from then where there's 12 of them.
And are you still sending them all cards?
I send cards, yes, but I don't put any money in.
Right, 12 grandchildren. That's a fair old birthday bill every year, isn't it?
Well, maybe the ones in England only get a text on this. Phone thing, you know. I'm becoming modern. I'm using the phone.
Yeah.
But anyway, what was I going to say? Something else about? Oh yes, Joe Duffy is very powerful.
Going back to what Seamus is saying about sending on post the message, is it?
No. But on a totally different thing, we were looking for tickets for something. Weren't getting them, and my daughter-in-law said she'd contact Joe Duffy about it, and we got them.
Right.
I'm not going into any more details.
No, that's fine. He's a great believer in sending cards and letters himself. I don't know whether I don't know whether he puts anything in them, but he's a great believer in the written word and dropping cards.
Yeah, well, it's an old-fashioned thing, but cards birthday cards are obvious. I mean, the envelope is obvious, you know. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. Yeah. You don't
send it anymore. Yeah, no, I'm sure my own mother is probably sick of hearing herself referred to any time I'm standing on this programme. But her own mother, when she used to send her 10 shillings when she was living in Dublin and being sent money by her mother, used to send it in two parts. She'd cut the 10 shilling note in two. Send it in two separate letters. And then my mother would sellotape it together back on the other end and she'd be able to spend it up in Dublin.
That's a great idea.
There you go.
Wonderful.
That's Granny Shop, as we used to call her, the shopkeeper, had knew how to mind her money. Siobhan McQuillan, you've had the same thing.
Yes, I've had the same thing this year, Colm. Yes, I mailed a birthday card containing money to a grandson in Donegal, and it has never gotten there.
Right. And where were you sending it from? You know,
sending it locally.
Within Donegal, right, okay.
No, from Monaghan.
Oh, from Monaghan, right.
Yes.
And just never arrived. And was this a one-off or has it happened a couple of times?
Well, it happened one other time, but it was maybe a week late. I did contact on post and it did get there in the end. It did get there. But this time this card has not gotten there. And I did contact on post. They asked me to come back to them, give them so long time, maybe it will arrive, you know. I got back and they have advised me to fill in a form to investigate maybe where it went. But should we know where that's going to go?
Right.
And, you know...
And how much was in the card, if you don't mind me asking?
There was €20 in the card.
And no coins?
No coins.
Just a note?
Just a card.
Right.
And the money inside of it.
And sealed, unsealed?
Sealed.
And sellotape or just lick the envelope?
It was lick the envelope.
Right. But, you know, you were
because
happy.
Because I think when you sellotape it, I think you're given the message that there is something inside, you know.
I know, yeah.
But,
kind of drawing attention to it.
No, that's the way it was.
Right. And your own address on the Seamus wrote his own address in the back of it. He sellotaped. I'm not trying to make odious comparisons here now in terms of precautions.
Yeah.
But Seamus wrote his own address in the back of it and the addressee's address, as is the custom, on the front of it. Did you take that precaution as well?
No, I just wrote the child's name and address on the envelope.
Right. And how long ago did this happen?
This was mailed on the 1st of July.
All right, OK. So yeah, this investigative process is in train as we speak, is it?
Well, I haven't sent the form off yet, like, you know, because, like, I mean, I have difficulty actually in getting it printed.
All right.
I don't think it's a matter anymore where you can go to a local post office and get these things, you know. So I've had difficulty in getting it printed off.
So you have to. There's no physical form you can pick up in a post. This is one of these things you have to download it as a PDF,
print it off.
Isn't
that the way it is with most things now? You have to download them, and you know if you haven't a printer, maybe you can't do that.
Yeah, but printers are expensive enough to keep filled as well. So I suppose that there's plenty of people who don't have them. Hang on there, Siobhan, and till we go to Bernie. Bernie, is this is an issue affected you as well? Is it?
Good afternoon, Colm. In June, I sent a card down to my grandson with money in it, as you do, which I've never done before. But thinking I wouldn't see the child until such a time, and I said, "Here, I won't have them disappointed because I like the cards to get there for their birthday, always." But the card arrived, the money didn't.
Oh, the card arrived,
the money
was
gone
out. And was it a sealed card?
It was, yes.
And was there any sign that the card had been opened and resealed on the other side?
My daughter thought that it was someone had steamed it to open it.
Right. Well, we won't speculate as to where that might have happened in the chain. Yeah.
Got in touch with the sorting office where the card went to. I know where it is, and they asked. Believe it or not, Carl, you know what they asked me.
Go on.
Could they have a copy of the envelope that the card went in to prove was the card?
And
And I said, no, I haven't got a copy of the envelope because the envelope would be down in the child's house in Portlaoise and it's probably in the bin by now, but my daughter went looking for it now. It was gone. It was gone out in the recycling. So that lady done well getting hers back and I got nothing back.
Right. And well, she now, she hasn't got hers back yet. Siobhan was only saying that
she wanted to keep on it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she still has to fill out the form and send it in. It was Seamus. Seamus got the whole form sent in, and he's got the reassurance now from Unpost.
Isn't it lousy though, Callum, to think you can't even send a few? You can't send a few, Bob, because I wouldn't be technically minded. Now I couldn't go on to what you call Revolut like that. I'd have to have someone to do that for me.
And the tenor was in a note, was it?
The tenor was in the card.
All right. Seamus, you want to come back?
I know the last tenner was in my possession. I put into the car.
All right, Seamus, you wanted to come back in there.
Yeah, Colin, I think, you see, they make it so difficult. And if it's a small amount, you're not going to go to the bother of filling it all in and doing all this. So there's an awful lot of hoops and red tape you go through, and most people's not going to do it. And then when people say they're going to phone the Joe Duffy show, you see, every second person says that now again. And it's like just old steam to these people. Say, oh, yeah, I'm going to phone the Joe Duffy. Everybody says that to these companies and everything, and they're getting so used to it. They did take it seriously, I think, when I said I was going to do it.
I suppose you have to take it in good faith that they said they'd launch an investigation. They've told you now after this passage of time, I suppose. And look, I mean, let's face it, there's people probably woke up this morning to find both welcome and unwelcome post on the mat that had been safely delivered by Unpost in the form of bills and cards and the rest.
I have a great postman here, and he knows me for years and everything. It's very hard, and the postman, especially in the countryside, he's a great thing, because you know, if you were not well or anything, he's the first man to tell everything. So there's great community service. I don't have a problem with Unpost. I think they're a great service. They do more than just post letters. They check on old people in the winter time and the Christmas time and all that. It's just that when things go wrong with, especially a birthday card like this, and children's involved in it, it's very stressful.
All right. Well, there's plenty of people in the same boat. They're ringing in and contacting us about it. We're going to get to a few more of them after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Currie. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Send us your emails on joe@rte.ie or text us on 51551. Now we're looking at correspondence going missing, birthday cards, cards for occasions with money in them that have gone missing in the post. Now, it does have to be said that Unpost deliver thousands and thousands of letters every day, some with money in them, some with demands for money in them, but they do have a good record in that regard. But there are people, and plenty of them, ringing in with experiences of cards not arriving on time. Breda, this has happened to you not just once, but a few times.
Oh, it has indeed, Colin. It certainly has. Last March, I posted three birthday cards to my nephew, two nephews and a niece, one in Donegal, one in Mullingar, and one in the Dublin area. And in each of the cards, I had €20. It was an awful lot of money, €60. But I posted the cards, and I always give my niece and nephews, I love them all, I always give them a few bob when it's their birthday. And €20 in each, anyway. Postcards in my local post office, and seal the envelope, and €20 in the cards, and off. I thought that's it, they'll get them for their birthday. And no call to say they had received them, they always ring back straight away, and there was no call back to say, no, thanks very much, you know, we got your card, the money in it. And I rang them, and no, they never got the card. So I rang on post. You cannot get on post. The customer service number is, out there for everybody to, the customer service number, but you can get no answer to that number. There's nobody there to answer them. I don't know if they are working in an office or if they are working at home. Right. I don't know.
Or if the lines are occupied. But anyway, the day you rang, you couldn't get through to somebody.
No, but I had, in the meantime, then I'd gone over to my local post office, and she gave me a form you can fill in for lost post or post that wasn't received. So I filled in the form and I sent it off. I sent the claim form last March, and I got a reply on the 2nd of August, 5 months later, from Unpost, from customer service, saying that like that. We're saying they're the deal with a lot of posts and they can't guarantee, and I'm afraid we're unable to find your missing items. However, inquiries are still ongoing, and if we find anything at a later date, I will, of course, contact you immediately. Now, that's the letter I received.
Right. No talk of a refund in your case, anyway.
Not at all. No, I got four stamps. Four postage stamps. Four letters I can post with four stamps. That's what they said to me, you know. And then my other... I always receive my bills. I always receive anything like that. September this month was my own birthday. And four of my friends sent me cards for my birthday. One of them had nothing in it. Two had two scratch cards, €2 or €3 scratch cards in the two. And one had €20 in it.
Right. And did they all get through?
No, the only one I received was the one that had nothing in it.
Right, so
I received the one that had nothing in it. I did not receive the other three.
So the one with the scratch cards, the one with the 20, not so they're just literally...
Two with scratch cards in it. €2, €3 scratch cards. And one had nothing, one had 20. And the only one I got was the one that had nothing.
Okay. Gail, you've been sending money in cards for years. Did any of it ever go missing?
No, it's actually, I'm ringing about a tip my godmother has. She lives in New York. And, you know, if there's an event, you know, one of my children's confirmations or something, she would send over some dollars. And what she does, she gets her dollars, she wraps them in tinfoil, like just your regular tinfoil, and makes it kind of a, like an envelope of the tinfoil, then puts that into the card and sends it from New York to Ireland, and it's never not got air.
And what's the thinking behind the tinfoil?
I don't know. This is her theory on it. I don't know whether, you know, are the letters going through some kind of an X-ray machine or something, but it's never not got here, the money from New York to Ireland.
Right.
So that's a tip for people.
And she thinks it's the tinfoil. I mean, there's plenty of people who have sent money. Right, and plenty of people have sent money, and it always gets through without tinfoil.
$20 or whatever it is, literally wraps it up in tinfoil, like, so it's completely flat, and then puts it into the envelope, the card, puts the card in the envelope, sends it from New York to Wicklow here, and she's never, nothing has ever gone missing.
Right.
So another tip people do is that instead of putting a card, you know, in your colourful envelope, put the colourful envelope into a brown envelope. So, you know, it looks like it's a bill or some kind of correspondence, as opposed to a brightly coloured envelope. Well, there's my aunt's tip from New York, and she's been doing it for years. And maybe the people of Ireland will start doing that. Wrapping the money in tinfoil and sending it over
wherever
their nieces or nephews.
Maybe there's somebody out there who can contact us on 0818715815 that can tell us what effect that tinfoil might have. She's a great mother, is she?
Yeah. She's a great godmother. She's 13 years older than me to the day. And then there's 13 years between her and my mother. So, you know, there was a bit of a link down through the generations.
Right. She doesn't have shares in tinfoil, does she?
No, I'm afraid not.
Right,
but,
okay. Anyway, she's a great believer in it.
She's a great believer in it, and it's worked for her. So hopefully the people of Ireland will take on that little tip.
All right. And where is she? How long has she been over in New York?
She's been in New York since I was a little child. She's there since 1986. And, you know, she married an American. She's her two children. One got married recently. And, you know, she comes back very regularly to see us, which is great.
Great stuff. Okay. Owen, you've got more tips.
Well, part of it was just said, it's if you're sending anyone a birthday card, there's a fair chance there's going to be something in it. So if it's a bright pink or a bright blue. So instead of sending it in the envelope, you take that envelope and put it inside a brown padded envelope. So nobody then has any idea what's inside it.
Right. So
people would have a guess that there might be cash in a birthday card. That may or may not be why they never arrive.
Right. And you say a brown padded envelope, like one of those ones with their bubble wrap on it, is it? That kind of one?
Yeah, anything like that. Or even just an ordinary brown envelope if there's nothing heavy in it.
Right. There was a time in Ireland, of course, that... Like, there was a time in Ireland that a brown envelope was a guarantee that there would be something in it, but I think
not anymore. There's not. That'll be brown envelopes, cash. Yeah. And, also, people should not be sending cash these days. You have the Revolut, you have bank transfer. It just makes no sense to be sending Revolut. And one of your previous callers was saying about sending 60 euros. If she's going to send that much money in an envelope, she should be doing it by registered.
Well, in fairness, she didn't send 60 euro in one go. She sent three separate 20s to people around the house. But look, I mean, you can appreciate some people are not on smartphones. Some people aren't signed up to the likes of Revolut. They could be sending money to people who are, you know, under the age of being able to have a Revolut account themselves, or indeed a bank account in their own right.
Then you send it to their parents and their parents can give them the cash.
Right, but you never send money.
It just makes no sense these days to be sending cash. There's too much of a risk involved.
And you never send cash yourself, do you?
I have never sent cash. I've always done the brown envelope. My wife used to send cash to her cousin, and I would always make sure that she put it in a brown envelope so nobody knew what was in it.
Right.
It's the only way nowadays. There's no other way. Like, if you just send cash in an envelope, especially coins. Coins move even if they're sellotaped to a bit of cardboard.
Even with the way Seamus said, she heard Seamus saying he sellotaped that coin to the inside of the card. You think the coin was the giveaway, do you?
I would say, yeah, but think about the thickness of an envelope. It's very thin, so somebody can feel the coin. If they feel a coin, they probably know there's going to be notes in there as well.
Right. All right, well, Seamus, I mean, I remember an old teacher of mine telling me that on a Friday when he was working on the buildings in London, he used to put half his wages into the post and stick it in a postbox on his way out socialising, so there'd be at least some money left on the Monday morning. So he knew it'd be all gone if he kept it with him throughout the weekend. But would you be sticking cash in the post again?
Well, I try it again for curiosity to see would it get there. Now, I've just thought a wee thing, Colm, maybe a post will come back with this. You know, this automated service, I was thinking, would it be possible that wherever that went, the coins, the automated thing picked up the metal and it rejected the letter and it went for human handling. You know the way, because I think these posts, they don't see a human touch. It's all electronic. I've seen a documentary on it once where there was all the posts and it automatically reads them and sends them everywhere. And maybe when I put the coins in it, then maybe a post will come back and explain or clarify this. If the coins maybe have rejected it and maybe it's sitting for the attention of some person where they're short-staffed, and maybe it'll turn up in 6 months' time or whatever.
Right. Look for the robot with the chocolate around his mouth. Maybe that'll be. That'd be the one. I don't know.
Do you think someone bought chocolate with it?
I don't know if robots eat chocolate. Anyway, Seamus, look, thanks for the call. We'll be back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungon here. You can get us 51551 for your text, or joe@rte.ie for your emails. Louise Hassan, describe this dapper gent to us.
Hello, how are you? Good afternoon. I had to go into the city centre in Dublin yesterday, and I parked in a multi-storey car park. And I saw an empty parking space and he was standing in it. And I sort of thought, oh, maybe he must be holding it for somebody. He was looking around. And then, but then he waved me over. And sort of. So I thought, okay, maybe he's waiting in the car next to the spot, you know. So I parked and I got out and he was just standing there. And I just said to him, are you okay? He was a very elderly gentleman and he was very well dressed. He was holding a newspaper. But he said, no, not really. And I said, oh, what's happened? And he said, my car, I've left my fob in my... I was just in a shop and I've left my fob in the shop and I've been back to the shop and looked for the car fob and I can't get into my car and I don't know what to do. And I said, oh, no, like... he said he was really shaking and he was very elderly and I said, look, I don't know what I can do. I said, can I do anything for you? And he said, well, you know, my phone and my wallet and all my cards are in the car, so I just need to get a taxi. My office is nearby, and I have a spare fob in my office. But I don't have any money because I've left my wallet and my phone in the car. I was really worried about him. And literally, all I had on me was €50 That was all. That was the only cash I had on me.
Right.
And I said, "Look, I'll give you this. You know, I can't leave you here. You know, you're in a state, and I'll take you downstairs and I'll show you where the taxi rank is."
Right. And when you say he was in a state, like, was it? Were you talking tears?
He was really shaking. He looked really shook, and he was really shaking, and his hands were shaking. And he said, "Oh, bless you, and like, I'll light a candle for you." And I was thinking, "Oh my God, that's like €50. Like, it's a huge amount of money." But look, so I walked him out of the, like he said, "I don't know where to go." And I said, "Look, I'll take you out to the car park, like downstairs, and I'll take you to the taxi rank." And he said, "Look, have you got a pen?" And I didn't have a pen. And he said, "Look, I'll leave an envelope with the €50 on your windscreen. Like, I remember where we are, and I'll remember your car." And he asked me my name, and he told me his name. And then I took him down, and he said, "I'll be back in half an hour." So I waited an hour.
Right. Did you go downstairs with him? I mean, you said you were offering to see him to the taxi rank. So did you see him way to the taxi rank?
All the way to the entrance of the car park, and you could see the taxi rank opposite. So I just said, "Look, there's the taxi rank."
And did you see him get into a taxi?
No, I didn't. So I went down. I only had €4 left then. So I thought, okay, I've got an hour. And he said, "I'll be back in half an hour." So I waited the hour, and then I felt like I'd be a bit of a soft touch for the elderly people.
You waited in the car park, did you?
I just waited. Like, I was back at the car park after about 45 minutes, and then I waited in my car for another 15 minutes. And then I just thought, look, I can't wait. Like, I have to get back because I have an autistic daughter, so I have to get home. And I told him I had an autistic daughter and I was going to have to get back. And so obviously he didn't come back. And then when I got home and I told a few of my friends, and they are like, "What would you have done?" You know, because he was an elderly, like an elderly guy, and he was very well dressed, and like, he seemed very genuine. But then they said to me, he'd mentioned that he'd rung his insurance, but he didn't know how long they were going to be. And they said, "Well, how did he ring his insurance if he had his phone in the car? And what did he do? Why was he in a shop if he'd left his credit cards and his money in his car?"
Right.
I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that makes." So I felt just so stupid.
Right. Like, so you're not holding out any. As you say, he was well dressed. He had a newspaper tucked up under his arm.
Yeah, and he told me he was 75, and so I was like, "Oh, bless him!" You know, his hands were shaking. Right. But the story, when I thought about it afterwards,
there was a few holes in it.
I think so, because I just thought, why would he be in a shop? And how has he left his fob in a shop if he didn't take his cards? Unless he was confused. Like, I could be completely wrong and he could be totally genuine. But if it wasn't genuine, I just want other people to know about it, because I just feel, I thought I was a very, like, you know, I'd be pretty aware of situations and wouldn't let myself get into a situation. Because somebody said to me, "Why didn't you drive him to the office?" And I was like, well, I wouldn't have let him get in my car, even though he said he was 75. Like, I wouldn't have been on my own.
You were trying to, on the one hand, take some precautions, but at the same time, try and be compassionate and sympathetic towards him. You're not holding out the possibility that, you know, as you say, he was an elderly fella. He was, by his in his own words, 75. That it may have taken him longer than he initially anticipated to get back. Maybe he had further to go. Maybe, you know, he got onto the phone to his insurance company and he got tied up in the bureaucracy there.
Maybe
you don't
know. Maybe it was just a couple of the things afterwards when people pointed them out to me were like, well, how did he phone his insurance company if his phone was locked in the car and he didn't have any money on him?
Right. What did he say about the office? He said he had an office nearby, did he?
He said it was nearby, yeah. He told me where it was, and it is very nearby. So it wouldn't take you more. If you were in a taxi and the taxi waited outside, he'd have been back to that car park in 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, not an hour. So, I don't think I changed anything. I still think if an elderly person was in trouble, and I really felt that they were in trouble, I'd hope that I wouldn't have to worry about whether it was genuine or not. That it, you know, it should be the natural thing to do.
And without mentioning a company name, did he say what he did, or did he claim that he did
no,
a particular job?
No, he just said he had an office. No, he just said he had his own office.
And did was there any kind of hesitation? Did it look like he was scrabbling for words, or did it all come out fairly fluently, the story he was telling?
It came
out
a bit fluently, but he kept saying to me that he'd light a candle for me, and I really felt that that was a bit, like, I know it's quite a normal thing to say, but at the other hand, he said it a lot, and I was like, well, you know, you can light a candle for me when you come back with the money and say thanks very much. Do you know, so I don't know. After I thought about it a bit, I just thought that was a pretty sophisticated thing. You know, maybe. I really hope he's genuine. I really hope that I'm just completely wrong and he's going to come on here and say, I'm really sorry. And that was a genuine, right, you know, genuinely that happened to me.
Yeah, but I mean, no sign as yet. If he is reclining in his office chair at some point reading that carefully folded newspaper he took out from underneath his arm, maybe this will remind him of the 50-year. But you were, I mean, his appearance, and was it his accent, his dress, was it the newspaper
he was
carrying? Do you think it was the overall package that convinced you he was genuine?
It was the overall package. He looked really genuine. But then when I thought about what he'd said about his phone and his money, and my friends were sort of saying, well, look, he'd been in a shop. What are you saying? He was in a shop with no phone and no money, and how did he ring his insurance? So I was like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense. But at the time, you're watching someone and you're watching them shaking and what they're saying, and, you know, you're worried. I was really genuinely worried about him. But it could have been a complete, like, act. So, you know, it's more believable.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, if it was an act, how, you know, and we're handing out the kind of notional Oscars here for people peddling a yarn. I mean, how good an actor was he?
A 50. He's brilliant.
Really? He was bigger than 50 out of 10.
50 out of 10. And I'd say that if he did that a good few times, you could make it got, you know, a lot of money. Do you know, it's a pretty good, you know, like, so. I would have always said I would never fall for anything. You know, I'm pretty smart with the texts and things like that. You know, when you get a text and it, you know what it is. And I would be I would have thought I was a good judge of character. But I really think that the story sort of falls apart a little bit. I really hope I'm wrong. I just wondered if anyone else had had the same experience.
Yeah, and as you run it over in your head and, you know, you opened up your wallet and you said there was, you know, you only had a 50. Can you recall any reaction, or as you handed the money over, was there any particular reaction, or was it just poker face? Did he just
are you going to be okay? He didn't ask me, like, God, that's a lot of money, and are you going to be okay? You know, what will you do now? Do you know, like, that would be what I would say to somebody.
Yeah, his demeanour just didn't change. He got the 50
at all. And he took it, yeah, put it under his newspaper.
Under the newspaper, not into the pocket?
No, like he put it under the newspaper. So then, you know, so then, when I look back, you know, it's such a huge amount of money, you know, but literally I couldn't, like, to me he was an elderly gentleman who looked up genuinely, you know, upset or his hands were shaking. But then when I thought about it, I thought, why was he standing by an empty parking space? Like, was he waiting for somebody? Do you know?
And did he claim his car was any of the ones nearby? Did he point at a car when he was giving you this story?
He pointed right at the other side. Like, it was like completely the other side of the car park. So nothing that I could sort of say, oh, yeah, it's over here. Or, you know, whatever. Like, I think, you know, I was running on instinct and just the look of him, you know, because my normal thing, you know, a normal person would say, well, look, here's my phone, or, you know, have you got any family you could call to come and help you? Or these are the sort of questions you think afterwards. But at the time, you're running on complete. I thought he was going to collapse in front of me. Do you know what I mean? He was shaking.
Yeah. And when you say well dressed, I mean, are we talking three-piece suit, bowler hat,
watch
on a chain, waxed mustache? Well, I mean, walk me through the ensemble.
Like a three-quarter length, like, coat, a three-quarter length coat and sort of brushed hair. Like, he did look 75, do you know? But I mean, look, I don't know. I don't know, like, to me, it was just, he wasn't holding, like, you know, he was holding, like, a big a big sort of newspaper, like, I don't know, like an Independent or something. I don't know, one of those.
Yeah, one of the broadsheets, anyway.
One of the broadsheets, yeah. So I just sort of thought, look, and you don't look, you just didn't look like someone. But then who is someone who's going to tell you a story? You know,
are you kind of kicking yourself that, you know, maybe there was a bit of judging a book by the cover, maybe a bit of prejudice on that?
I sort of think I can't do anything about it now, and I'd hope it won't change my character.
All right, well, hang on a second. I think we have a call that may make you feel just a little bit better about it. I mean, it's not going to get you back your 50 euro. We're going to go to Orla. Orla, maybe don't tell us what the car park was, but you think you met the same man.
Oh, I think I did. I think it was last summer, and when I was listening to the story, it was exactly the same. This gentleman came over to me very nicely dressed, in a tizzy, and he was locked out of his car and he needed to get a taxi back to his office, and I just, the very same, felt sorry for him, gave him 20 euros and
word for word.
Word for word.
Very, 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 I was like, oh my God, that happened to me when I was listening to the lady, yeah. But I gave him the 20 euros without even, you know, I was like, I really felt for him and I just gave it to him. And
same thing, he was looking very shook, was he? Did he have a newspaper under his arm when you met him?
Oh, God. Well, that's detail that I can't rightly remember, but he was definitely very well presented, was well spoken and did seem in distress, and I just felt for him and I was like, oh God, that's terrible. I mean,
right. And Louise gave him a 50 out of 10 for the act. What would you give him, Orla?
For the act? Oh, well, I was convinced, but I mean, I may be slightly suspicious afterwards, but I just let it go. You know, I was like, oh God, I don't know. And right. I was convinced enough to feel compelled to help him.
And I mean, look, you did it in good faith.
I did.
How long did you wait in the car park?
I didn't. I just said, that's okay. You know, I didn't ask for him to give it back to me.
And did he offer? Do you remember? Did he offer you the same thing? I'll stick it under your windscreen or anything like that? Or
that's not. He may well have. I'd be lying if I can't remember exactly. So you know, I only was reminded of the story as I heard it. And I was like, oh my God, that definitely happened.
Right. So Louise, it happened to you yesterday, Sunday, the 22nd of September. Orla, it happened to you when?
I think probably last summer or sometime when I was in Dublin. I'm going to say in the summertime, maybe autumn time, but within the last 12 months anyway.
Right.
So anybody then, like, please keep an eye out. That's amazing. I actually feel a little bit better.
I know. Yeah, but it was definitely the same thing, you know, well-dressed. Well-spoken. Yeah.
And standing in an empty space in the car park that you were about to pull into, was it?
No, he definitely approached me in the car park as I was getting into my, you know, going to leave the car park.
And you weren't nervous of him at all as he came towards you?
No, not one bit. No, and I'd be wary enough, but... He's
so elderly.
Seemed genuine.
So hang on a second. Exactly. So like Louise kind of ran through it, and she waited and waited for him to come back, and she suspects now that maybe the bona fides weren't entirely there. But when you met an individual matching the same description and telling a story of the same order, you just gave him the 20. You weren't hanging around for it. Did you give it any more thought until you heard Louise's story just there?
Well, no. I mean, was I slightly suspicious in the immediate aftermath? I probably questioned it. I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But anyway, and then I was like, oh, no, let go. You know, and if he's in trouble, look, he got the taxi and that's the end of it. But I didn't really until I heard Louise telling the story. I was like, that's definitely the same chap that approached me.
All right. Jacinta. Yeah. This is all sounding.
Hello, Colin. How are you?
This is all sounding very familiar. Without mentioning the car park, let's just say Louise, Orla, and Jacinta, you've all encountered an individual matching this description in a Dublin city centre car park. Yes. Tell us what happened to you.
Yeah, same. About a year and a half ago, got out of the car, and this gentleman approached me. Very distinguished looking, very nice suit on him, very groomed, no newspaper, no coat. And yes, he told me the very same story about the fob being stuck in the car. His office was close by and he was just looking for, he'd come back in a half an hour if I could just give him a few bob to get a taxi.
And how much did you give him?
But I didn't give him anything because I have to tell you, I just felt from the go-get. I'm a good streetwise dog, let's put it that way, Colm. And I didn't fall for it at all, I have to say.
All right, okay. I don't know whether that makes Louise or Orla feel better or worse, but we got to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
That's our lot for today. Plenty more calls came in on that dapper gent with that same story. We don't have time to get into it now because we're going to go late to Ray Darcy at a minute past three. Apologies.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.